Blog Talk Radio.
Incorporate in our very being
love of God, which means the love of all beings, regardless of who and what they are. And when we can do that, we can see the best in others, even if they are different. And then they'll be inspired to see the best in themselves.
I tell you, we have the greatest hosting partnership here. That is so beautiful. Wow. Well, I saw Rosemary just beaming and nodding. Yes. And you all, one of the things I love about both of you all, you have such a peace with you. You have such a calm.
Absolutely. We're all the reflections of each other.
I just said, I think, oh my God, these women are so beautiful. How did I get here? You know, and just to think about what love that Carter G. Woodson, who was the founder of Negro History Week, though we don't hear about the love. We hear very little about love during Black history. And I believe that's a factor that is missing.
Well, you know why? We spend a lot of time being angry at what happened. And because of that anger, in many ways we get stuck there in the anger at what happened. And there's so much to be joyful for. How can you feel love if you can't feel joy? And how can you feel joy if you're stuck in anger? Anger is resentment of what happened, but resenting it isn't helping us to learn from it. If we learn from it, then we can learn that what happened was a result of us not having love. That's what caused us to mistreat each other. That's what caused us to disrespect each other. And on the flip side, that's what caused us to accept mistreatment and disrespect. If we love ourselves, then we know that we should not allow ourselves to be mistreated. That was the spiritual principle that Dr. King had to help people understand, to give them the courage to resist mistreatment. If you love yourself, then you don't allow yourself to be mistreated, because that's a violation of God's law. If you are loving your neighbor as yourself, you must first love yourself. If you love yourself, you don't allow yourself to be mistreated, just like you would not allow a neighbor to be mistreated. So any law that demands you accept mistreatment is an unjust, ungodly law. So you must, out of obedience to God, disobey this law. It took a while for people to grasp that, because we had been so indoctrinated into obeying whatever the law says, and of course our fears of punishment, and even so much of the indoctrination in our religions teaching us that a good slave obeys his master. And you know that verse has been taken and twisted and used to misuse us for so many centuries. So he had to literally undo the indoctrination that made people accept the mistreatment. But when we go back and look at what happened, we spend so much time being angry at the mistreatment that we can't understand. It was all for us learning how to love. Here on earth, you learn by experiencing opposites. So you learn what love is by experiencing what love is not. So now we know that that's not the way we should treat each other. That's not what we should allow to happen. So now we can do the thing that you should do, which is to treat people with kindness, compassion, and respect. Since we know what not love looks like, now we need to demonstrate what love actually looks like.
I guess what we'd like for it to look like. And that's a good point. And I take that Matthew verse of love your neighbor as yourself. And when I worked in the community, and really after about the third year, I realized that the spirit of love really wasn't in the community. We talk about it, but when you start seeing the trash and you hear the anger on the voices of not just the adults, but the children, because You know, even when we are in our mother's womb, whatever is there that we feel the child inherits that. And I think it's so important that expectant mothers and mothers understand that our feelings are very important and our children hook into those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's these things, they just don't go away. Once they enter into our cells and our memories, our cells do remember and our bodies remember, they're there. They can be there for a lifetime. You know, we had a conversation yesterday with Rosemary, Minister Rosemary, and she was saying, Joy, you're doing this and you're doing that and you're over here and you're doing so many different things. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I'm taking this class. She said, when are you going to have time to take a class? You can take another class. So I thought about what she was saying, and yet for something inside of me saying that she's hitting on something that's really deep. And I'm sharing this story real briefly because it may help somebody. And she said, well, what is it that you're seeking? What it is that you're looking for? What it is that you really want? Because you don't have to do all of these things. And I said, well, I just want some peace. That was easy. But she said, yeah, but that starts with you. I said, She said, well, what else is it? I said, well, you know, I've got to get myself organized. I'm all over the place and blah. She said, well, that also starts with you. She said, whatever it is that's blocking you from doing what you've been called to do, she said, it's very small. She said, but it's been going on for so long until it's become a huge problem. But it started small. And believe it or not, before the evening was over, about an hour and a half after I went to Walmart and the police, other places, I stepped out of my car. Each one of us have a relationship with God, and each one of us communicates with God in a way. And as I swung out of the car to put my legs on the floor, I heard my mother's voice.
Ooh.
And my mother's voice said to me something that she said 1,000 times. Your mouth is going to be the death of you.
Wow.
She would say that to me. I don't think a day passed in my life with her that she did not say that growing up. And it connected with what Rose was saying. Our parents, even in their love, their ignorance of words, the power of words, they just don't understand.
They don't understand.
They were not taught. And we just receive as a child. But before I put the next foot out on that garage floor, I told myself, you're right, Mama. My mouth is going to be the death of this old me.
Mm.
The way I used to be. And
yeah.
Stubborn all these years. This mouth of mine is going to bring a new life, new energy.
That's right.
And a new joy. And that's it. And that happened just that quickly. And I was, my mind was hemming on Steve Harvey the other day. Another girlfriend sent it to me. And he told me took it to a commencement class. And I am, and you're so right. We're staying angry, not understanding that it's our mind, our heart. We make that decision to be what it is, and we cannot be what we want to be while we're angry and fussing and fighting and playing hate on somebody else.
That's right. That's
and we just cannot accomplish it. And we cannot hold back any feelings that are inferior. Don't play small. Don't play inferior. You know, Rose was telling me yesterday, oh, you just can't do that. Make other people more important than what you do. And I just want to thank her about that this one week. Baby doll, my mama hit me last night, and I said, oh, Mama, I ain't carrying that load no more. Not here anymore. So expanding Black history in a circle of love, it has to start with self.
That's right.
It has to. So now my circle of love and my own black history, my own African-American history, my own African history. I think, you know, that was so crazy. I'm having babies, y'all. And what you find is that here I had one child was Negro like my Becca mama. The next one that came out was black. And I asked, why are they calling my child black? Oh, that's what they call you. Then the next child came out, they said it was Afro American. Who was naming all these people? I'm a Negro, and I'm giving all these mother babies. What? Who is this? Who's calling the cards and what comes out of my vagina? Come on. Does it have any power at all? Mother, do I have any say in what's coming out here?
Each one got a different label.
So I don't get angry over it anymore. I say, oh, my gracious. This circus has got to stop.
Yes. That's funny, though, yeah. That you had children during the time that we were trying to figure out our identity. You know, we were trying to figure out, well, what do we call us and what's the appropriate term? And over a period of time, you know, we were trying to take the sting out of the word black because that had been the negative. And then we wanted to identify with a place because for a long time, even to be African was something shameful because of how we had seen the depictions of Africa. So all of this was trying to erase a low self-esteem about our identity. So your children were born through each of those phases. And you say, wait a minute, who's calling the shots? Who's making these decisions? You know, now we're officially something else. What is this?
Yeah. And the last one that was born, I was in my 40s then, and they said, hey, what do you want to call him? I had a choice.
Which one of these labels do you want him to have?
But up to that point, maybe somebody else was calling the shots. And that's something to think about. Who, besides this, who makes those decisions? If we're adults and we're Americans, who's making these decisions on these labels?
Yes.
Who's doing this? And why is it that we don't have a say? There are referendums. I've never seen a referendum on that.
You know,
I understand that Jesse Jackson was the one who spearheaded, but down south I didn't hear that, and I didn't hear it when I came to Chicago. But nevertheless, that's something to think about, you know? And so we're just going to be asking our callers to be sure. I'm making calls because I sent out messages earlier today, and I'm just grateful for being here with you all. And so I feel that Black history should be honored in a circle of love and respect, and also with a vision of coming into this thought about the spirit of America. Do any one of you ever remember saying, in the spirit of America? Because I ask people, they say, well, what is that? And I think that's another good question.
What do you think about that, Rosemary? What is the spirit of America, given how our American experience hasn't been very pleasant in a lot of ways?
Because I wasn't thinking. I was still thinking about love and how to address some of these love things. The spirit of America is what Americans make it, really. That's the spirit of America. So it's really up to us to think right, to speak right, and to act and react right and feel right. That's the spirit of America. So whatever's going on in the multitude of this country, the thinking of our people, that's what it's going to be. We set this up. But I wanted to kind of go back to love. If that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to say, you know, many of us say, do you love yourself? And, you know, of course we're going to say, of course I love myself. You know, I love myself. But if we pay close attention to our words and our thoughts and observe our behaviors, actions, and choices, and how we treat our bodies and each other and our children and our mates and our money and how we invest our energy and our time, we might just see a contradiction, an incongruency or a gap, and many of us are not there yet. So we really have to stop and think about what we're thinking about. We've been told to love ourselves, and we know it's a good idea. It's a very good idea to love yourself, but how do we love ourselves? Because many of us have haven't been shown or taught how to love ourselves. Now, we haven't seen it modeled, and it hasn't been example or demonstrated for us. See, it exists as a good idea in our mind, but is it not yet a reality or in our lives? You know, many times we think loving ourselves is buying designer clothes and bags and shoes and things of that nature. And we've been taught how to maintain and groom our bodies, and taught how to love ourselves.
No.
Maybe not. Okay. So if we truly been taught self-love, we would believe unwaveringly in ourselves instead of doubting ourselves. No, when we truly love ourselves, we have self-esteem and confidence and standing on the word of God, okay? So we'll have faith instead of fear. We'll feel free instead of obligated and feel innocent instead of guilty. Somebody mentioned that earlier. So play big instead of small and accept each and every part of, you know, we should accept each and every part of our bodies instead of rejecting the parts that we don't like. You know, like my tummy, I don't like that, so reject that. No, love every inch of yourself and acknowledge instead of deny. And avoid, okay? So be at peace instead of stressed out. And be complete instead of complain and see perfection instead of finding fault. So love ourselves like I think one of you said, love the way God loves us. Love in spite of and regardless to. Just love yourself, period. You know, forgive yourself. Be with yourself. When you pass a mirror, say, oh, atta girl. You know, I am luscious, lovely, and exciting, and excited. I am the essence of femininity. And if you're a guy, say, I am the essence of masculine. Love yourself, because you know what? That body that you're in, that's yours.
Yeah.
So take good care of it, okay? So, you know, we literally must unlearn self-loathing and relearn self-love. And I say relearn because in reality, we are love. How can I say that? Because the Christ lives within us, and God is love. So that love is already within us. But unfortunately, somewhere along the way, we forgot who we truly are in Christ. And we've forgotten the primary cause of suffering is forgetfulness. We have forgotten who and who we truly are. And if we're not loving ourselves, then we're certainly suffering. Because we're suffering from spiritual amnesia. And of our divine nature as a son of God or a child of God, the Christ that lives within us, you know, because we have dominion, in other words, we have complete power over our thoughts and feelings. And with this power comes responsibilities. Those responsibilities are, as a man thinks in his heart, so if those responsibilities are our thinking, how we think. Those responsibilities are our feelings, our thinking, our feelings, our words, our actions, and our reactions, because our thinking governs our feelings, and our feelings govern our behavior. So we have to be very particular about what we think. Don't think any old thing. As a matter of fact, stop and think, what am I thinking about? What am I saying to myself about myself? Am I loving myself? And if you can't love yourself, say, can I love the Christ within me? Can I love who God has made me to be? And whatever body you have been given, take good care of it. But remember, your mind is even more important than the body that we're in. But we have to take good care of our bodies, okay? So we have to practice joy.
We practice and we share that message.
We have to make room for love, make room for joy.
Mm-hmm.
We take a lot of time to worry, but let's take out some time to feel joy. When's the last time you felt joy? When's the last time you felt joy, and when you felt that joy, you want to kind of like bottle it so you can get it again when you need it to feel it again. You know what I'm saying?
You
want to know, what was I doing? What was I thinking when I felt this great joy so I can bring it back again? Because the enemy, the society, the media, it's not there to make us feel joyful. It's there to say, oh, this was recalled because people are dying from E. coli and Listeria and all these different bacteria. And as soon as, I'm going to stop talking in a minute, as soon as I say I'm going back to the gym and do this and do that, this starts saying, well, COVID is back and there's another strain and blah, blah, blah. So, think about joy.
Well, that's why even circling circle of love, it begins with each one of us as individuals. And what I'd like to do is to spread it. And what you're saying is very true. And the more that I can take ownership of my joy, and I do have that capacity to revive myself more than put myself down. But that stumbling was what I was not really working on with as great a significance as I would like to have. But even with my history, I look at every individual as a part of a community and have a certain responsibility to a community for saying and taking heed to what you're speaking about, Rosemary. But I think that as we live it and as we share and demonstrate it, it's more impactful because it's not being done in too many communities. And I feel that it does make a difference when you step outside and share that love with the neighbor. You step out. I get a lot of joy working with my neighbors, a lot of joy. In fact, the person that spoke to me about love, and I'm not ashamed to say it, was Alderman Lorraine Dixon of the 8th Ward. And when I worked through my community, and I worked for the sake of my children as a mother, and that's another thing about love, too. It depends on where's your circle of love. My circle as an individual is one thing, but then my circle expanded as a mother. And when I realized that my community was not what I felt it should be, I wanted my children to feel safe. I wanted my children to be protected. And I took the love that I had for my children, and I went out and organized a block. I think that's significant to what you're saying, and I also think it's important for us to understand that with that knowledge and with that wisdom that we have, it brings with us a responsibility. However way you activate it, however way you go about it, is according to whatever gift that you've been called to do. And that's something that I've been called to my community, and I know that my gift is to speak. And I was able to do that. And it made a difference. It made a difference. I got a lot of flack. I got a lot of pushback. But eventually, my block organized, and that was over 30 years ago. And they're still coming back with second generation. And now they've got a real powerful line. So what I'm saying is that keeping it to self all the time doesn't bring expansion. And as a female solution, I would like to see us take those initiatives to move through our family, through our community, because that's what our nation is made up of. That's what our communities are made up of. And somebody, just like Martin Luther King or whoever, they made a difference. But I don't feel the love. I don't see the love because we're still not, as a community, not being as receptive as I feel we should be. We do have callers on the line if you want to participate in this discussion of expanding Black history in a circle of love. You can just raise your hand or press on. I'm sorry, press the one.
Press one, then raise your hand.
Yeah, press the one. Press the one. Thank you, Rosemary.
Yeah.
Okay, who said
2081?
Yeah, 2081. Did I do that? Yeah. Oh, there we go. Yes, caller, can you?
Yeah, 2081. That's me. I'm listening, and can you hear me?
Pearl. Hello. Wow. Well, you came right in the midst of me talking about the block. How you doing? Thank you.
Yeah, I'm good. So I'm listening, and what I appreciate about platforms of discussion is that it allows for variance in terms of perspective. My perspective on love is taken from a state of war. And what I mean by that is that I don't, for me, and I'm a historically astute because I study a lot. So I think that there is a misconception that is often attached to anger in a way that is more about evasion than it is about the advocacy of protection. So my position and the righteous indignation that I feel about my community is not about this particular narrative of slavery. It is about real legislation and policies of genocide in perpetuity. It is about things that are happening and are still happening in terms of medical experimentation with our children, with our elders, and in our community. It is about the absolute lack of accountability from the FDA regarding the chemical processing of foods and how that's affecting health and watching people die in our faces. So for me, the love, it comes from a state of protection that I feel oftentimes becomes misinterpreted because of a lack of, oftentimes I feel, depth of spiritual maturity that sometimes people are afraid to talk about what's really happening. So I'm not in a bubble. I'm not somehow dealing with the world from a conspiracy theorist, quote unquote, which is often used when the truth becomes too much to deal with. I am dealing with the fact of health and having people constantly on my phone who are dealing with symptoms that could have been resolved with alternative ways of dealing with detoxing the blood as opposed to cutting them or chemically radiating their bodies. And so that creates for me a different fortress and a gate of protection in my community that I feel is God. That oftentimes through the bureaucratic genocide that has given us reclassifications of our name and through imperial evidence, I understand who I am. I understand that my people were the Indians here, that we are Nachitas, Choctaw, and Cherokee, not through Ancestry.com, but through the stories that they told me who they were and where they were given penalties and often death if they called themselves Indians. And the many, many thousands of books that narrate the Black American of being on this land. And so when my approach to love and loving thy neighbor as thyself, but Christ also dealt with it, if that's the book in reference, he also dealt with a brood of vipers. He called them wicked. He called them, your father is the father of lies. In Revelation 3:9, he said the Jewish and the people that call themselves the Jews are the synagogue of Satan. Like, the Bible deals in those real contrasts that I feel sometimes get lost. And I feel whatever this particular platform for me in my life is in to stand for the truth that God has given me. That comes with very practical applications of natural science that are in alignment, like creating a community garden and making sure that people have access to food that is organically grown. And still knowing, and I have a call tomorrow with a particular professor that studies soil science, to find out that the Department of Water and Reclamation, they put inside of the soil that they're delivering to our garden what they call forever soil. It's chemically treated in such a way that the chemicals that are in the soil are inside the food, but they knew that. But that, I'm not shocked about that because that's what they do. The genocide on our people is not about slavery to me. It is about policies that I'm watching happening every day, from the pipeline to prison, and watching a woman like myself, when it's time to get married, that all of those men were held in prison and held to a higher level and a standard of accountability and penalized so harshly that it was time for us to procreate and be married. We had no access to viable actual partnership and companionship. That affects me a certain way. And knowing that when I was a child, the things that they were talking about in regards to predators, super predators, that Biden and Hillary Clinton, when they put those policies into play to penalize our people. So there are real dynamics that go into play. So then my responsibility is coming from a place of love, and it is a warrior. It is a fight, and that is the part that oftentimes is misconstrued, because everybody has a place, and I respect it, and I get it. We have healers that come in different ways, and my impact, it feels no different. When I'm out here in these streets, and I think you need a different type of skin when you're out here in these streets and you're dealing with the shrapnel and you're dealing with the residue and you're dealing with the carnage that has been happening because of the war on our people that's still in place. My issue is not about their narrative of slavery, because I know that that particular narrative has also been deceptive. It's not true. Just because of the alignment and the things I've studied, I know they're not telling the truth, but they won't. I know who that enemy is. Be wise as a serpent and harmless as a dove. So I respect everybody, all the healers in our community and what they bring. But I think the warriors are oftentimes labeled in a way that when they are murdered and assassinated and killed by these particular governments and people, we almost think it's inevitable because they're telling the truth. And then we tell them that they need to be quiet and do it in a different way. But I'm not built like that, and I'm okay with that. But I think that the respect should just be as much received as the way that we operate, because this system tells us that you need to be quiet in order to be effective. You need to be silent. You need to protest and do a silent march and sit down and shut up. They tell us how to protest about our pain and anger, but if you scream too loud, if you lament and you weep, if you begin to rail against the system, if you begin to expose it, then they kill you. That's the truth. I understand that.
We gotta take a quick break. Let me make sure I have your name spelled correctly, because I want to put your name up on the screen as you speak. Can you spell your name for us again?
Black Pearl. Black Pearl.
Black Pearl. Spelled just like it sounds. Black and Pearl. Okay, so that was a voice of Black Pearl. All right, well, we certainly do appreciate your fire, Black Pearl. We gotta take a quick break, and when we come back, perhaps we can talk about some of the things that our dear sister Black Pearl brought up, because there are some very strong feelings that people have, especially the very unloving beat to death that we saw, those who watched the video, and that ignited quite a bit of rage.
Yeah.
So how do we love, how do we forgive, how do we overcome things that wound us so deeply? There has to be a response. What is the godly response to what we saw?
Because we have to have a response to it. We just can't keep our heads in the sand. We'll call you right back.
So we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about the solution.
Yes.
So stay with us. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to light your number up, raise your hand so we know you have something to say. And if you're watching us on Facebook or YouTube, feel free to write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com. And I'm Viato. Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Have forgotten,
And so when we don't know that we are an expression of God, when we don't know that we are all with, we are one with all beings, all there is, all that is God. When we don't know that and we see others as the enemy or as separate from us or as lesser than us, when we don't know that, then we do things that are hurtful. So the people who are doing cruel things are people who don't know who they are. They have forgotten. And they're walking in spiritual blindness, in darkness. They can't see. The best thing we can do is help to enlighten, help bring the light, help shine the light so they can see who they are, so they can remember who they are. And when we know that that's why they have the problem, rather than us looking at them with anger and hatred and desires for vengeance, we can have compassion because we can see them as you look at somebody who, say, is, if you've ever been around a person with Alzheimer's and they can't remember and they can't remember who they are and they can't remember how to get home, they can't remember the name of their own children, you don't look at them with hatred. You have compassion for the fact that they have lost their memory. They've lost their mind. They've lost their sense of identity. And so you don't hate them when they say things that don't make sense or they you know, turn on the stove and almost burn the house down. You know what I mean? That when they do things that could harm themselves and others, you don't have anger at them. You understand that they are not in their right mind. They don't understand who they are. And so the emotion that you feel is not anger but compassion because they're suffering as a result of not having that memory. They're suffering. And just like people who do hateful things.
And the caregivers are suffering too.
Yeah, and the caregivers are suffering because they can't reach them. So we suffer living with so many people who have lost the memory of their divinity. And we have to keep working with them and trying to prevent them from doing harm to themselves and others. So that's our responsibility. When you're the caregiver to somebody who has Alzheimer's, you know they're not thinking straight. You don't let them stay home alone and wander out into the street. You don't let them turn on the stove and burn up the house. You understand that they are not in the state of mind where they can accept responsibility. So our responsibility is to not have people who we know are not spiritually seeing to be in positions of authority and responsibility. That's our responsibility. We know they don't know. They shouldn't be heading governments. They shouldn't be heading organizations and corporations and places where they can make decisions about people's welfare. They should not be in those positions. They cannot see. They're not in their right minds. They have forgotten who they are. So our responsibility is to look for the people who are spiritually aware of who they are and their connection to all that is, so that they don't make decisions that are hurtful to others. That's our responsibility. But we don't have to have hatred and anger. We simply have to have the compassion to understand that where they are and their spiritual evolution is still a state of amnesia. They don't remember who they are.
And that is great. And may I also say that on the other end, Naima, it's important to understand we also have a responsibility to our young people.
Yes.
Our education system is inexcusable.
Right.
Sometimes we're forgetting.
And we shouldn't keep putting our children in harm's way by putting them in systems that destroy them. Just like Rosemary was talking about, even and you were saying, even the words that you use, if we know that words are powerful, and our children are being put in positions and places where they're being told they're stupid, they're ignorant, they can't learn, they have a problem. We're allowing people to destroy them with words, and those are not people who should have authority and have time to spend indoctrinating our children with self-hatred. That's our responsibility.
If we can't
send them to the institutions and trust them, then we need to teach them at home. We have to take more responsibility. And this when we take back our power and stop giving it away to people who are not in their right minds, people who are not spiritually able to see, people who are destructive, when we take the responsibility back that is ours to have, then we don't have to be angry because we're not constantly subjecting ourselves to mistreatment and subjecting our children to mistreatment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We have to make those choices to stop giving authority to people who should not have it, and we have to take the responsibility that is ours in the first place, protecting our children, giving them a loving environment, giving them care and concern. You don't see any animal in the wild that's leaving their children to be devoured by beasts of prey when they know it's their responsibility to protect. We have to do the same thing when people are doing things that are harmful. We should not be sending our children to them to keep harming them and then getting angry when they do it. We are responsible.
We are. We are. And that love your neighbor is a major key that is, that is, that will bring us back, not just into connections with conversations and love, but also understand that it is in the neighborhood. Every leader, as you said, comes from a neighborhood,
absolutely,
comes from a community. And we are also responsible for raising up leaders.
Yes.
And with the thought of neighbors coming together as a family in love. And it takes a while to bring that reality before. I tell you, it's not something that happens overnight. It takes a while.
It does. Well, you know, I think the things that are happening are meant to motivate us to do what is necessary. We have to get disgusted with ourselves enough to collectively make some decisions, some of them having to do with, like you did, Mama Joy, organize a block club. If we are not angry enough at what happens in the state of disunity to just go and knock on doors to each house and say, look, let's organize, let's get to know each other, let's trade numbers, and let's watch each other's children. Let's have a block club where we know our children on this block are protected. We have to get disgusted enough with what we're seeing ourselves do and our blindness to decide those of us who are seeing should be organizing. Because the blind can't lead the blind, but the blind should never be leading the seeing. So we know better. So we must do better. And if you like, we can open the mic again for our sister, Black Pearl, if she has more reflections that she'd like to continue.
Okay, your mic is open, Pearl, if you have another comment.
Well, one again, like I said, I appreciate all the perspectives that we bring as a people. I think that oftentimes conversations when it concerns the Black American, it's just very, like, vast, like, we. And what I'm saying is that I know so many different people on the ground that are doing the work. And just because of the fact that it's not advertised or seen, because this system is not going to do that, I just know there are a lot of people on the ground doing amazing work. And what I know is that what has sustained us as a people is because of the love. What has sustained Black people, it is because of love. Like I was telling to my white friends, never have I ever come to meetings with Black people and we were discussing how to burn crosses in white people's yards.
Mm.
Every single time that I have gotten with Black people, it is always about, just like this platform, we are just a different type of people. I have no space in my life and heart for making excuses for the type of treachery, because I feel like oftentimes in our systems, the victims are blamed for their pain, and very little responsibility is ever given to the serial killers. Jeffrey Dahmer got a whole commissary from the Catholic Church. We want to do documentaries on these sick people, but the victims that he murdered and killed and ate, we want to deal with the sickness because that's what we feel like we can control. Poor Jeffrey. But we forget about all the lives that have been slaughtered and dreams taken and the families that were destroyed because of somebody else's sickness. I cannot give this particular ideology of white centricism, and I believe that any color can play a game in it, but it is an ideology, and it is dark, it is diabolical, and it is evil. Anytime groups of people and scientists can watch, and they do it today, in the same way they did with the Tuskegee experiment, they watched these people, they injected them and told them they had bad blood. These were just vulnerable people, and the greatest commodity that any of us have is trust, because that's what we do. You're going to trust that these people are telling you the truth. You got bad blood, and then they injected them with gonorrhea and syphilis. And they knew that they were suffering, and they did not offer any particular remedy to their pain. They watched them, and that, for me, is things that are inexcusable. So the thing in the resolution to the anger, and I'm not really sure how it's defined in this context, because I don't have a problem with the righteous indignation, because I think that there's a reason for anger. There's a reason for the emotion, because oftentimes it activates us to move, to shift, and to change things. So I don't have a problem with anger in the proper context, in the same way that I love taken out of context, because many cults that sexually abused and violated children and women were built on this premise of love. So everything, the Bible says that a false balance is an abomination to the Lord. It also talks about anything done in excess is sin. So the excess of anything. I think that everything has a proper balance. The way that I use my righteous indignation is a way to stay aware of the enemy that I'm dealing with. I don't need to negotiate or sit at a table to itemize our pain and plight in order for this enemy to understand what it is. I understand that there is a real enemy because I'm just dealing with the pattern. So how do we deal with that? Look at the ingredients of the foods that you purchase. Number one, like produce and that you buy at the supermarket when it has a barcode of the number 9, that is food that's organically grown without any particular pesticides or insecticides. So that's a way to know and to be educated about that. When you become aware that you're dealing with a particular ideology that is absolutely targeting you for extermination, like Margaret Sanger told Dr. C.J. Gamble in a letter that she wrote in 1939 that said, we don't want word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro. That's in writing. And this is the same hero that Hillary Clinton had admired and put on a pedestal when she received the Margaret Sanger Award. It is Margaret Sanger that created the Planned Parenthood, which was originally called the Negro Project. So there are things that are placed that we should be aware of in order to move. So pay attention to the ingredients in your food. If there are more ingredients that have words that you cannot pronounce, then you probably don't want to buy it. Get a second opinion. You can go to the doctor to diagnose. All sickness lies in the blood, so that detoxing is important. So being able to have a diet, even if you do it for a week, where you're just eating fruits and vegetables and nothing cooked, there are options there. That does make a difference. Detoxification is absolutely important. Get involved in community events that people are working on the ground, going door to door. Then you know the real temperature of the environment and not just a sort of rhetoric that clouds us with a sense of just, you know, everything's going to be good. There's real stuff out here. And we can know what's really happening. Those are ways that I am involved in love. It activates me. The righteous indignation that I feel activates me towards service.
That moving to that circle.
And thank you, Pearl. We appreciate you so much because, you know, anger is a motivating factor when there is a need for change. And everything that happens is to motivate us to change things to the way they should be. So sometimes we have to get angry enough to get over our fear. We fear being responsible for our lives. And as Pearl is speaking about the poisoning of our bodies, how many of us are afraid to grow our own food? And it's not difficult, but if you've been conditioned to depend on others to feed you, and yet they're poisoning you because they have a thought in their minds that, you know, there are too many people on the earth, we've got to get rid of some. And if you allow them to put forth their agenda when you have the power in your hands, and a lot of people living in yards, well, you have free will. There's nothing stopping you from taking that lawn that nobody can eat and turning that into a farm that can feed your whole family. Nothing is stopping you at all. What are we fearing that keeps us from taking responsibility? And there is no power greater than any of us other than the power that is all of us. So everything that we are experiencing is to motivate us to change things to the way they should be. So I agree with Pearl. Yes, anger is a good energy. It's like putting gas in your car. But if you put gas in your car, if you fill up your tank and you turn the key and let it run and run and run, but don't go anywhere, then what good is the gas? So the anger has to motivate us to action. And the action has to be action that fixes the problem. So, I mean, and I understand her speaking of protest marches and so forth. And sometimes marches are a good means of venting, but they don't change a situation. Generally, they used to be used to alert people, to inform people, this is what's happening, we are collectively angry. Okay, we make that statement. Now what? So if we get stuck at stating that we're angry, that doesn't change things. What power do we have in our hands to change things? Every tool that we have, we can change things. We have the power to create. We are creators. We are expressions of the creator. So if we don't like the way the monetary system is being taken out of our hands, create our own. Create our own means of exchange. That is rendered useless because we have the power to do that. There are no victims on this earth. Everybody's given the same free will and the same power to create. So sometimes we need to get angry enough to take back our power. So thank you, Pearl, for reminding us that this is why this is happening, so we can get angry enough to take back the power that we have to create the world in the way it should be. And nobody has more power than the Creator that gave us all the power to create.
That's so very true. So we have another turn.
Well,
thank you. Any comments, Rosemary?
But I think anger, too much anger is not good. What good is it doing you just be angry? You know, even this conversation has really caused me to feel really down because I wonder, what can I do about certain things? So my thing is, whatever I can do about certain things, let me do it. Because as long as we tolerate a thing, it will continue to happen. So that's different than just getting so angry and getting your blood pressure up and it shows in our countenance and we're just mad and causing self-loathing, which may show up on occasions when after, showing up because it's what somebody else has put off on us. And it causes us to internalize that feeling of anger because we're feeling maybe hopeless or helpless that we can't or aren't doing anything about it. My thing is, let's be an example. You know, like I was watching Sidney Poitier or something about him and Harry Belafonte and these black actors in the 60s. They were examples. And when other black people or black men or black women saw them, they felt something coming up in them like, I can do this. I can be a better person. I can change the world by something positive to show my people. But I can't deal with that anger because, we have 3 days, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Now, let us not give yesterday just a lot of anxiety from yesterday, from things that we couldn't do anything about, things that we feel helpless and hopeless about because yesterday is gone and it. And all that anxiety, we don't want to put that anxiety in our bones, in our bodies. And then tomorrow, here we are today, instead of enjoying today, we're fearing what can or might happen tomorrow. Excuse me. And I know, everybody has to deal with it his own way. But the Bible says, be angry and sin not, and let not the sun go down on your wrath. So if you can't do anything about it, just a prayer. Throw the hands. Give me the wisdom to know the difference.
God, things grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Stop letting me not deal with that. Mm-hmm. But give me the wisdom to know the difference.
To know the difference, yeah.
I can't carry all this stuff with me. I can't carry slavery and Martin Luther King. That happened. And the thing about that is, language. We didn't know the culture. We didn't know anything, and we were treated like animals. And look at us. And we came out of it. We came out of it how? Because we've recognized somewhere within us. We remember something within us that we are children of God.
That's it. That's what it takes.
Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy.
Love and happiness. Yep. Love and happiness. Yeah.
We can't do something about something. Let's choose what we're going to do something about.
Yeah.
I can't do something about everything, but I can spread some joy, and I can be a good example to young women and even young men. And, okay, people, that's all I want to say.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all I really appreciate, Rachel. I know you. I love you. I really do. I've talked to you. You sing, too, right? I have this song that you sing. I'm telling you, I love it.
We got to take a break.
We get into this.
Scary. I can't carry all that stuff on me.
Yeah, you know what? That's the whole thing. I'm not asking. It's not about asking. How do we tell the story? And that is a difficult thing to do because all of us have the gifts, various gifts. And I can remember when I was working in the office in the school, and it was a show, and it was a news feed, and they were interviewing different authors, and they were all Caucasians, and they had this burning need to tell the story, because in the history book, it's important that we know the story, how we tell the story, the spirit in which we tell the story is something that we have to craft. That was the challenge that these people had. Because the things that were done were so horrible. Listen to this, what they had concluded. That there was not a language devised yet to be able to describe it.
Mm.
Well, that's something in time. They want to tell it, but they don't want to tell it like it was. They said, how do you craft the language? You see, forgetfulness can also come when you don't tell the stories. When our children go into the...
We are the story. We are the story. It shows up in us. So how do we tell the story? Let's tell it in a way that we are overcomers. Let that show up in our attitude, in our spirit. We are overcomers. That let us tell the story that we know who we are. We are children of God. We don't. I don't even know how to say this.
Well, hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how do we tell the story? How do we generate joy? How do we stay at peace regardless of what has happened?
Yes.
We can always be at peace. We can always experience joy no matter what the story is. It always has a whatever has been, is, and will be, we can still be at peace. How do we do that?
Okay.
So we'll be right back. We'll be right back, y'all. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back in a moment, so stay with us.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naim Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health.
I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Perfect Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
From within yourself. And when you have had a joyful experience, you can always rekindle that by remembering how you felt. You ask somebody, people sitting around watching football. But, there are a lot of people who this brings them joy. That's when they gather with their families, they have fun, they watch a game. And there's nothing wrong with having fun. There's nothing wrong with enjoying life. Sometimes we need to lighten up, and I think childhood is a very important time for us to set the memories in place so that children, whatever they go through in life, they can recall that moment of joy. We have to be able to do that because, and there's been studies shown that soldiers who've come from battle, the ones who end up with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, are the ones who couldn't recall any childhood memories to kind of reset their brain back to that joy feeling. If they had a sad childhood, maybe parents fought, maybe they, got beaten or abused, they couldn't overcome the devastation of that war experience because it was such awful things. Like Mama Joy is talking about something so awful, there's no word to even describe it. But if you can reset your brain, if you can go back to that point where you had joy and remember that, you can overcome that trauma. So it's important for us to create joy for our children, create laughter for them so that their brains can remember it, their minds can remember it, their hearts can remember it, so they can come back to that even in the moments of the worst distress. They can come back to that spirit of joy. We have to give them that. And when you don't have that, you don't have anything to return to. I don't know if you've ever had the experience where, like, if your computer crashed or something, you had to go back in the memory and reset it to a time when it worked. Yeah, So that's the same thing we have to do with ourselves when we've had a bad experience. We got to go back to joy. We have to go back to love. We have to go back to happiness and remember how we felt, because everything is a vibration. Just like Rosemary was talking about, when you're angry, anger is a vibration, and it brings you down. Sadness brings you down. Yeah. And that's why you have to choose what you're going to watch and listen to on the news. If everything you see in here is bad news, that's keeping your vibration low. That's keeping your spirit low. And you attract to you wherever you're vibrating. So if you're vibrating on a low level because you've been angry, you've been sad, you've got feelings of guilt and self-hatred, all of that keeps your vibration low, and it keeps you attracting experiences that are on that vibration. So when we know the spiritual science it's trying to tell you something. But, you know, when we can keep our vibration high, keep it on love, keep it on joy, keep it on peace, that's the kind of experiences we're going to attract. And so if we want to attract love in our lives, we must be loving. We must be sending love in order for love to come to us. We are creating our experience. There are no victims. And that doesn't mean we're blaming the victims. We have a choice on how we're going to respond to somebody's behavior when they're showing that they don't know who they are. And so, therefore, they're doing hurtful things. That doesn't mean we have to respond in kind. If you're down on the ground, I got to get down and wallow with you. If you're going to cuss me out, I'm going to get down there and cuss you out, because all I'm doing is bringing down my own vibration. I will bless you. What does the word say? Bless those that curse you. That's why. So that you can stay high no matter how. What did our dear sister Michelle Obama say? When they go low, we go high. That's a spiritual principle. You have to keep yourself up, because you attract to you what you project. So it is important for us to choose joy and to choose love even when others are unloving. We got a couple of comments here on, let's see, we got our sister Zelda says, Grand Rising, beautiful queen, sisters, enjoying the show. Thank you, Zelda. We'll see you on Monday. She'll be with us for our Monday morning mindfulness here on the Female Solution. And our Friday host, Viata, says, great day, beautiful sisters. Thank you, Viata. We'll see you on Sunday. She's with us for Soulful Solutions. No, I'm sorry, Soul Purpose. We got so much soul. We got Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursday. We got Soul Purpose Healing with Viata on Sunday. So all our soul sisters are reminding us of this soul's journey. And, okay, Lucky McCauley says, Lucky McCauley from Nigeria, I need an American black lady for a serious relationship. Tourism is my hobby. So proud of my race and color. How old are you, Lucky?
Sorry, we've been being successful. We tell our story by the love that shows through us. We tell our story by the countenance that shows upon us. We tell our story by what we are radiating within ourselves. Let us tell our story that way. Let us not tell our story sad. We had nothing to do with that. They are the victims. They victimized us. We came out very victorious, and we are overcomers.
And we learned something from that. I think we learned something from that experience.
When you walk in a room, be unrecognizable. You're not a slave. You're a victor. When you be unstoppable, that's how you tell your story. Don't let anything or anybody, any negativity stop you from your goal, what it is you want to be. Be unremarkable. Jesus was unremarkable. You know, he did not let circumstances interfere with what he had to do. So we tell our story by showing up the way Jesus showed up. Let's tell our story that way.
Absolutely.
Good. I like that.
And, you know, the interesting thing, during Jesus' time when he was going through that crucifixion experience, of course, no one knew what the outcome of that was going to be. So that's why the disciples all fell apart. They were all distressed and everything. You know, it was horrifying. This person that, you know, had been your hero, now the government saying that he's a criminal, and you got the crowd treating him like he's a criminal. But the lesson we learned from that is no matter what anybody does to you, they cannot define who and what you are. Only you can define that. So when we know this, like you just said, no matter what was done to us, we are still the great people that we always were.
So someone else's mistreatment doesn't make you any lesser than who you are. We've never been slaved. We've been held captive and forced to work at gunpoint. But slave is not an identity. Slavery was an experience. It is not an identity. And we overcame it. That's why we can sit here today and be an example for people all over the world, which we were, on how you overcome. How do you overcome the worst depression? You stand strong and you're power of who you are.
And it's also important to understand that conversations like this can help and enable you to be able to rise above these feelings, these vibrations, which we've given home to for a long time, and vacate them. Vacate them and start anew.
Right.
It's conversations like this that, well, we have solutions, other corrections that have to be played in many places. And as Pearl has said, we know many organizations that's functioning, but for some reason, they find themselves at some point back and captured in the vibrations of the anger.
Yeah.
And
how do we not do that? How do we keep from going back? Because everything that happens, it's like it takes us back there. Every new event, we're back in anger. How do we not go back? What do you suggest?
Say that again.
How do we, every time someone's killed, every time we watch a police video on Facebook, somebody's getting arrested, somebody's getting beaten, somebody's getting shot, every time that happens, that takes us back to that anger vibration. How do we prevent that from happening? The way I prevent it, I just don't watch them. I'm not allowing that to be in my spirit to create that anger in me. I don't need to see it in order to know that it shouldn't. We should not have police that are given the power to abuse. I don't need to see it over and over and again. I already understand that principle. I'm already working on some things to prevent that. I don't need to keep being re-traumatized by another beating. But some people, they watch it religiously. Every time something comes on Facebook, they're beating, they're watching it, and then they're angry and they're fussing, and that ruins your whole day. So how do we stop that cycle of being returned to anger over and over and over again so we don't end up paralyzed there and can't move forward? How do we stop that?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. And I'm just going to say, though we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, okay? And when I see that, it bothers me because of our human nature, but I don't know the answer, but I'm just saying that when we see that happening over and over again, let's remember that God is in charge, okay? And it's just waking us up more and more because we are people who seem to be slowly waking up. You know, it's like I was talking to a lady in the store. We were just talking about inflation, and she was saying, well, God will handle it, and we just have to wait on the Lord. I said, well, I think we got to do more than wait.
Well, God gave us intelligence to create. We ain't got to wait. Create.
If David had just waited, Saul would have killed him long before.
Right.
Now, the people in Egypt, in Exodus, going from Egypt to the promised land, that's what they were doing. They were waiting. And see how long it took them? 40 years. They should have been there.
That's a lesson.
So we have to put our trust in God and keep this joy flowing through us, because the joy is the strength of our life, or strength is the joy of our life, whichever. That's the strength and that's the joy. We have to not let ourselves get caught up in what the enemy is doing, because when we take out the people, we know that they're being used. People are being used by the enemy. You know, the deception. Deception is thinking you're doing the right thing, and you're not.
Right.
And thinking this is right, and it's not right.
You don't know.
Okay? The enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy.
Right.
And when we when you see these characteristics on a person, run to the nearest exit, okay?
So
because these people are being used by the enemy.
So now Viata says, she says, Christ on the cross lesson is also a reminder to crucify the flesh and walk in the spirit with the mind of Christ, being forgiving and showing much love. You know, one thing that I would say, the lesson that the one we know is Jesus was showing us is that you are not your body. This is a temporary vehicle. You are eternal life. So if you have no fear of death because you understand there's no such thing as death, there's only life inside the body and then a return to spirit, which we all are. So then you don't have fear to face people. You don't have fear to change things. You don't have fear to speak truth. You don't have fear because there's nothing anyone can threaten you with because you don't fear death. That is the freedom. And he was demonstrating this, demonstrating that, in fact, there is no death. So what are you fearing? What can anybody do to you? What was that Dr. King said? I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. I'm not worried. This is the state of being that we must attain so we can live in peace and joy and no fear. There's nothing anyone can really do to you, nothing. Even if your body is damaged, they can't kill you because we are eternal life. We are eternal beings. So why are we living in fear? Why are we living in anger? Why can't we love? Why do we feel that someone has power? They don't have any more power than we have. No one has power.
Mm-hmm.
We can choose to do whatever we want, and no one can make us do anything. So that was the greatest lesson that we can learn. Create what we want, and don't waste time being angry at people for what they have done in their ignorance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we have a caller here, 4538. And before I get to them, I just wanted to say I really appreciate that checkpoint that you made, Rosemary. You said, I said, the Lord is my shepherd. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. So we have to find that checkpoint, something that checkmate, check my emotions, check the feelings, check whatever I'm going to bring it to me because I know this exists, but I can't let it bring me down. So let me know that this is my valley that I'm walking through, but I shall not fear. I like that a lot because if I can hold on to that long enough, it'll cool me down, right? And then the Spirit can come in and give me some directions on what move to make, what words to say, so that this event I can diffuse a lot of others from moving into that circle of and turmoil, you know, when you can't do anything about it. We're going to take this call, 4538, and for anyone who desires to be a part of this conversation, just press 1, and we're open to you. Mm-hmm. So 4538, your comment, please.
Did you open your mic? Here we go.
Open your mic. I didn't open your mic. Sorry about that.
Oh, and before they speak, we've got a comment from Viata that says we should see the word wait as a verb, taking action as a servant of the Most High. Yeah, wait on the Lord means wait on the Lord's instructions. Wait on instructions on what to do. That's what we're waiting on.
Because I'm walking through the valley. I'm walking through the valley of shadow of death, right. I like that. Put it all together. Make it work for you. Thanks, Viata.
Yes. And 4538, your mic is open. Go right ahead.
All right. Appreciate everybody getting together and leaving the line open for me. I appreciate that. Sean Wood calling from Chicago.
All right. Give me your name again.
Sean Wood.
Oh, Sean Wood. Sean, how do you spell your Sean? Some people spell it S-E-A-N.
Mine is
S-E-A-N. Okay. All right. Sean Wood, W-O-O-D?
Yep, B-S.
Okay. Well, let me just put Sean, that way I can't go wrong there. All righty, and that's the voice of Sean. All right, go right ahead, Sean.
Yeah, you know, like with the anger question that went out there. Well, just one on that one, which is, I guess we have to be as vigilant as what they is. I got this one from As a Man Thinketh book. It said, your mind is likened to a garden, and whether cultured or cultivated or allowed to run wild, it will bring forth. So I feel as if though, like, this is something that has to be managed as a lifeline, like for a lifetime rather, in order to just, you know, manage one's thoughts as far as like, how do you, I don't think it's a destination as far as like defeating anger, but it's like, how do you manage that or continuously put it into check or manage it or pull those weeds as often as they grow within your garden?
How do you manage anger? Well, hold that thought, Sean. We got to take our last break, and when we come back, we'll talk about that because we have a lot of anger in our community, and it can be paralyzing because we get so angry we can't do anything but express anger. And then after that, we're still angry and nothing's changed. So what do we do?
That's it. Nothing's changed, right?
So we'll be right back after this last break. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. So stay with us.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Is Monday morning a struggle to get out of bed, into the swing of things? Well, don't worry, you are not alone. Join us for thought-provoking, stimulating, and mindful conversations on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks for your Monday morning mindfulness session on Blog Talk Radio, The Female Solution, Mondays, 7:30 until 9 a.m. Be sure and send your ideas, thoughts, comments, and suggestions. Also, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, visit ZeldaSpeaks.com and send us your info. We'd love to have you. Experience mindfulness moments with the mindfulness/stress relief coach, Zelda Speaks. And thanks for sharing the mindfulness moment tip of the day. Stay on purpose, stay empowered, and stay tuned to your next session of Mindfulness on Higher Learning with Zelda Speaks. Make it a mindful day. And thanks for listening.
right. We are back. We've got a question here. Pearl, Black Pearl says, please define anger according to your context. So who wants to take that one? Define anger. She says.
Well, before I define mine, my gosh, let me look and find out what it means and see if you are in agreement with that or.
I heard a recent quote. Anger is fear expressed, and that quote was from the book Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh. And I thought about fear because everything, and it's we're told that every action proceeds from one of two emotions, either fear or love. So love, of course, is trust. Love is well-being and the desire for the well-being of others. Fear is distrust. Fear is belief someone's going to harm you. And if anger is fear expressed, people get angry if they believe someone's going to harm them. They get angry if they believe that someone is going to cause them pain. They get angry if they believe someone doesn't care that they're causing them pain. And I think that's where our anger comes from, the belief that others don't care that they are causing pain. And so it's the fear of that, the fear that others don't care that they are causing pain. So anger is fear expressed.
Yeah, well, anger is an emotion. It's a very deep emotion. And anger is a means of expressing negative feelings, negative hurts. I think that what we're speaking about is excessive anger, which becomes destructive. Anger has its place, and anger can be good because it's an opportunity for you to express what you're feeling. But if you make that your dwelling place all the time, then it's not a healthy place. It's not a healthy place. And I like as we having this discussion because this is something that I think that as we get more at it with an intent to bring solutions, to give us more buoyancy so that when situations like that have happened with the police officers or our young people in our community being, stoned, murdered, whatever, that we come together. Anger should be something to come and express the outrage, have it there, and then say, now what can we do to make this a safer place? You know, what can we do to get closer together to diffuse it? Because one of the things that disturbs me is when someone gets harmed or hurt in a community and nobody speaks up. That disturbs me. I want to go back to Sean. If I'm hoping that conversation, I mean, that answers Pearl of what anger to me.
Anger is also, it's much easier to deal with anger than it is to deal with hurt. Anger is hurt.
Yes.
We have hurt feelings. So even with people you know, they hurt your feelings rather than saying, if you hurt my feelings, we strike out at them because that's an easier emotion to deal with because hurt makes us vulnerable. You know, it's like, but anger, you know, it's like, you're ready to fight or whatever, you know. It seems to show strength, but it isn't strength. It's hurt feelings. So next time, you know, you feel, you know, even with your spouse, with your children, we get angry with them. It will really hurt that they did what they did.
Yeah. And again, it's the feeling that you can't trust them because they're hurting you, and you.
you feel that they don't care that they're hurting you, and so that gets expressed as anger.
And if you really stop and think, it's much easier to deal with the anger than hurt.
Absolutely.
The term is really hard, because now you got to recognize that somebody had that kind of power, that somebody hurt you. But if you're angry, that just kind of wipes out, you think it wipes out the hurt, but it doesn't. You're still hurting. So it's better for us to just be honest with our mate, our children, whoever hurt us, and say, you know, that really hurt my feelings. And that helps them to say, you know, that touches something in them, rather than going and angry, fussing or whatever, you know, retaliation. It's a different place to come from.
So we're
a place that makes your endorphins
that leaves you in power. That leaves you in control.
Yeah. Oh,
That's good. That's a good thought.
So Rosemary, for those people who look at a stranger who does something awful, because it's the same thing. I mean, like if a man's driving down the street in his car and then he gets pulled over by a police officer, and the police officer decides to snatch him out and handcuff him and search the car and, you know, have him spread all on the hood of the car and, you know, motors going past, watching him be humiliated, and he's, you know, officers threatening to beat him. I mean, it's the same thing. You're hurt that someone chose to be so unloving. But the way you're going to express it is anger, because anger makes you feel more powerful than expressing, wow, you really hurt me by treating me badly. Right, standing there crying. So anger is what gets expressed, but it's really the hurt. And how do you deal with people who are choosing to do hurtful things in a way that doesn't keep you in a state of anger? And that's really why there's so much anger, because people see that and then they identify with it, and then it brings them back to a time when someone hurt them. And then they end up feeling the hurt vicariously watching that other person being hurt. That's why it can be very destructive watching this hurtful action happened to someone else over and over and over again. And science has proven, studies have shown, if you watch someone being hurt, it lowers your immune system. If you watch someone doing a good deed, someone feeling joy, it boosts your immune system. So we're all connected energetically, psychically, spiritually. So whatever someone else is going through, we're feeling it when we identify with that person. And that means we don't want anyone to go through pain. We don't want anybody to suffer. But then we also feel the helplessness if it happens and the people who do it don't seem to care. And that's why their response, rather than hurt, is anger, even though really, the, as you said, the root of it is hurt. So again, how do we respond in a way that we feel powerful and not keep going through the cycle of anger?
S4538, mic is still open. Did you want to finish in a comment on that, Sean?
My mic is still open?
Yes, yeah, we want to hear your response, your thoughts on anger.
Oh wow, I appreciate it. I feel like, okay, we deal with the word anger, and one thing Mom has taught me that was real significant was just the definition of a word itself and how you can have so many definitions of just one various word. So, I mean, what it is that anger can be for one, it can be something else for somebody completely different. So, I mean, to enjoy the wordplay of that and to go to war over the use of play can be, you know, entertaining. But I feel as if, though, like even with all things expressed, when it comes to a word or however it is that we choose to express, I feel as if though we should always end it with a certain sense of conviction of something to do with what it is, or well, how do we do what? How does it become constructive? How does it make it useful? Well, let's put this into action, in a sense of some form of moving forward to be productive. You know, to that's fine. We can use anger.
you know, like you say, that it can't be a dwelling place. It can't be something that is destructive. But if it can be a conviction in the sense that something that propels us to move forward, it's an assignment, it's something that shakes us, that convicts you, but it doesn't condemn you. It helps you check yourself on a minute level. So, I mean, to necessarily not look at what the world is and are they making progress on behalf of us, but what it is that I'm doing on an individual level to just help move this movement forward myself. Because it's like you look at the news and they'll easily tell you, or outside of yourself easily tells you, or on your phone it easily tells you what it is that you lack. And to tell yourself that you are abundant from within, you know, to be in abundance from within, to instead of just looking outside of yourself saying I lack abundance or I need abundance, or to have an abundance versus being just simply being abundant is a complete difference. So I feel as if though, yeah, anger has its place. Those are my thoughts. It allows us to just be constructive and something that we can propel ourselves, allow it to leave us with assignment and conviction and something that we keep in check with ourselves throughout the week. And I feel like that would be my newfound church in a sense for me. Something that we give these statements but allow us to be what it is and these people that allow us to be these convictions throughout the week, allow us to be the people, you know, we say we are.
You know what? I'm listening to what you're saying. And what is amazing that in all the conversations that we've had, you bring up a point that is so important. Where are you going? What is your purpose? Because if your purpose is, if you're secure in your purpose, you will not allow that to distract you to the point that you're going to be captured and enslaved or imprisoned by that. And what your purpose is and what your goals are, your commitment to yourself will determine how long you stay in that state of anger. I thank you for that. I don't know how you ladies feel about that, but that was a point that was made that I know we haven't discussed or said anything, but knowing who you are
and knowing where you're
your
going.
Identity.
Yeah, and having, like you said, your purpose. Well, Pearl says, anger in this conversation feels like people's fear of what is known and a sense of helplessness to change the conditions. So we blame those that speak with passion. We call it anger, but for me, it is truth, also known as love through activism. I believe that context is important and listening. Often, through my observation, I find that people are more uncomfortable with how things are expressed than the sentiment itself. Of all the things that I've stated, the actual sentiment has been lost in translation. You know, I remember when Malcolm X used to speak and people said, that angry black man, oh, he's always angry. And he spoke with passion because he wanted people to feel the intensity of the emotion. But then there were people who would be offended because he wasn't speaking in that docile tone that we had been conditioned to believe that Negroes must use in order not to offend white people. So I think it is important that we speak with the emotions that we feel in truth, and there are times when a strong passion needs to be expressed because we want to move people to the passion that we feel, and we should not have fear that others don't like how we say something because it's going to come from the heart, and if our heart is passionate, that's
right.
What's going to be expressed. Once
that's right.
We,
once
be we,
judgmental, but
right.
Have a place where people can express their feelings.
Right, right.
That's very important. We do listen. Very, very important.
And that's
how
come sometimes young people get angry because
right.
They feel like no one listens or no one wants them to say what they feel or they don't like what they're saying, you know, or you shouldn't say that. So if they're not allowed to speak what they feel, then the anger gets expressed in other destructive ways. That's when we saw, you know, the riots and all of that, the tearing up things, which is totally destructive. Okay, you tear up a building, and that does what to change the problem? Nothing. So we have to direct the passion just like you direct a car after you've filled it with gas. You're full of this emotion. Where are you going? And like you were saying, and like our caller was saying, if you know where you're going, if you know what your direction is, if you know what your purpose is, if your purpose, say you're a musician, your purpose is to use your craft to affect the hearts of people with your words, your sounds, the spirit that you use. That's what that's your purpose. So something happens, you know, you come up with a song that expresses how people are feeling, and you come up with a song that inspires them to a new vision. You know that's your purpose because that's your gift that you have. You know, if you're a carpenter and you want to build a building, well, you know that's your purpose. So you take that energy and you build structures, you build houses, you build places where people can gather, you build places where people can live. Whatever your purpose is, take that passion and do something with it that addresses a need and not just sit in the anger. Pearl has a couple other things. She says, we're talking about anger but not what caused it. The anger is stemming from not being heard. And I agree, not being heard, and that creates frustration. And Pearl says, love has been used to mask many deceptions. I'm keen on the fact that you know a tree by its fruit, so the word is only as impactful as what it demonstrates. I certainly agree with that. So then, how do we take this emotion that we feel and convert it to loving your neighbor as yourself and expressing love and converting our actions into loving actions, even though what we have witnessed and experienced has been very unloving? And I guess my question is, can you love the people that committed the atrocity, and how do you love them in a way that is reflection of the Christ consciousness, the enlightened consciousness, knowing our divine nature? How do we express love in this situation?
Well, I think for myself, my voice is just about gone.
Uh-oh.
For myself.
About 10 more minutes. If it can hang in there for 8 minutes, you know.
There's a Native American says that when we fear something, we destroy it.
Mm.
And that is something that sticks with me. Things that we fear, we destroy. When we even fear hearing the expressions of others, we become judgmental and see them as oppositions, and we want to shut them down. The situation with those young men, I look at them, I look beyond them, and I saw them as young men who had mothers. Not only just Tyrus had a mother, each one of those young men had some people who loved them. They were probably fathers of children who loved them, and he loved them. And in this moment, that vigilante spirit, that mob spirit, is very real. And when you don't have a real commitment to your own personal goals and knowing your purpose, you can get caught up into something that has nothing to do about you and where you want to go in your life. And I get sympathetic because as a mother, I would hurt to see my child, because I know that if you're a loving mother, that would not represent you.
Yes. You want to say, I didn't raise you to be like that.
Children, and with children. So I look at them not as the individual, but in the context that they have come from and that they have brought grievance and great disappointment to their family.
Yes.
And to community people.
Yes.
So my love for them, it goes into what Jesus said. He said, Father, forgive them. Mother, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And I tell the story, even reflecting on what Rose said, and take that idea, that thought that I have, as one that I have become victorious over, not being succumbed by that.
Mm.
And, you know, not consumed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's horrible. But just think personally, what have they done to the womb that bore them, and
yes,
the fathers,
yes,
and the aunties, and the aunts? Their families are devastated.
Yes.
I don't know them. Feel for those that love them. Somebody loved them.
Yes, and they hurt their families. Yes. Yeah.
So that's something, you know, so I don't carry that. I said, let's move on.
And I think that's something
that story
to realize.
Because if we're healing, let's be about the healing.
And
we know these things happen. And start working on our children. Because it says, more difficult to repair, Frederick Douglass says, a broken man than it is to raise a child.
Right, right.
Love is a decision. It's not a kissy, touchy, feely thing. It can be it's a decision. So to love, in my mind, is to do you no harm. That's all I'm going to say. To do you no harm.
Do you no harm, right. And I think, well, we're about to wrap up now, and I thank everybody who chimed in. I think we're going to evolve to an understanding that when people do horrific things, there's something inside of them that's broken. And we can show love to them, and we can put them away someplace where they can get healing. So at some point, our prisons are going to need to be healing centers for people who are broken inside. And this is why they cause pain. And that's the loving thing to do. If you stub your toe and your foot is in pain, you don't turn around and kick your foot up against the wall and hurt it some more. Why would you do that? So we need to remove people from society so that they can't cause any more hurt. And while they're away, we need to heal them. And when we can see all people who do crimes against other people as people who are broken and in need of healing, that's the loving way to see it. And we want them to emerge from prison being healed and whole and not being the same people who could succumb to that mob violence kind of behavior. And when we can feel that way, whether the perpetrator is black or white or Hispanic or Asian or anybody, when we understand that the soul of that person is pure love, that's from the divine. Whatever they've learned, whatever they've experienced in life that has broken them and twisted them and made them blind to who they are, that's what's caused them to cause pain. That's what we want to heal. And when we can see it that way.
30 seconds to 4388. They had their hand up. So you can close us out. 4388.
4388.
Got one more?
Yes. Good afternoon. I just heard a lot of questions, and I have one answer for all of you. The purpose of life, is joy. The purpose of life is fun, is happiness. And if you're going to rebuttal that, I'm going to give you the same answer again. The purpose of life, and when you're happy, that means you're trusting in Almighty God. When you're happy, it means that you have faith. But when you are disrupted by other things that takes away your happiness, you've lost your faith. You've lost your trust. The purpose of life is happiness. Stay happy. Stay happy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Rosemary, I knew she beaming on that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Ernie. Chicago. Thank you, ma'am.
end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/thefemalesolution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows. Listen to our radio shows. Order our books. And be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Xiexie. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsahamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, Gracias. Italy, Grazie. Egypt, Shukran. Ghana, Medasi. Nigeria, Eshe. South Africa, Ngiyabonga. Senegal, Jared. Kenya, Asante. Israel, Toda. Pakistan, Shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.